This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the November 10th edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm Mike Hogan in studio and joined via remote on Skype from London, Pete Fornatel. Welcome, Pete.
Welcome to you, sir. I understand we are going to have the whole team together today. We're just waiting for the 7 train to arrive at Grand Central. Is that about right?
Matt Bernier is at Bryant Park waiting for the 7 train. Pete, I know you've got some activities you have to get to, daycare activities you have to get to later. So we're going to start. Matt's going to join mid-segment. Depending on how long we go, you may duck out. I don't know. It's free-flowing. You kind of have to call audibles and play it by ear when you're trying to get all of you. The star power aligned in the same room. So,
and with that,
Mr. Bernier walked in.
Very nice.
I think he's going to fill his water and then sit down. But let's start with a little tournament talk. I know all the NHC action has been heating up, and I'm sure there's a lot of activity on that front. Why don't you start us off there? Matt can get settled, and then we'll dive into some bigger stuff.
Sure. We talked a little bit about the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge wrapping up, and you guys did a nice little thing on last week's show with Matt sort of recapping how his BCBC went down. And with that tournament in the books now, it's all eyes on the target of the National Handicapping Championship. For those who don't know, the NHC is the one tournament. You can't buy your way in. You have to win your way in. And there are now just under 2 months or just about 2 months, I guess, for folks to still do that. So that's plenty of time. We're going to have a lot of activity coming up on NHCqualify.com. The purse at the NHC this year expected to be $2.5 million, maybe even a little more. So this is something that horse players are definitely going to want to pay attention to. There's a golden ticket aspect to having a seat at that particular dance at Treasure Island in January, and folks should take a look. We had a contest last Saturday, won by one of my favorite tournament players, Stephen the Undertaker Thompson. Steve Thompson already had his maximum of 2 NHC qualifications for January, but he was playing for tour points. This is going to be another fun thing for me to be covering in a lot of my columns for the next couple months. Not only does the overall winner get a prize for the NHC tour, but the folks finishing in the top 20 will go on to compete in a tournament within the tournament at the NHC. That was Stephen Thompson, the Undertaker's main goal last weekend on NHCqualify.com. There also, of course, is a big race to finish in the top 150 on the tour, and that's because if you're not already qualified straight in, if you finish in the top 150, you get an automatic berth. Well, how big a deal is that? It's a huge deal. Last year's tournament, I think at least half, maybe more than half, of the top 10 all qualified via tour points, including the overall winner, John O'Neill. There's a good story that I want you to tell, Mike, about one of last weekend's winners on NHCqualify.com. Because Thompson was double qualified, that meant an extra person was able to win a seat. And I have to describe this story as the return of the anti-DRF podcast jinx. We all know about the Sports Illustrated cover jinx. You're on the front cover there. You know, Cleveland Indians or whatnot, forget them. They're going to finish in the basement. For tournament players who appear on the DRF Players podcast, it's the opposite. And if you just go through some of the guests we've had on the show this year, including early this year, guys like Roger Satine and Jonathan Kitchen, they come on the show, they catch fire, and end up doing fantastically well. The latest version doesn't involve me. It involves you and a certain food truck, perhaps. Tell the story.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. Last week I was just getting lunch, as I often do, at one of my favorite food trucks, Uncle Gussie's, who was also recently on Chopped. If you watch Chopped, I think they had a little bit of an issue and something didn't end up on the plate, so they didn't make it. I don't know. I didn't see the episode. But last week I was getting lunch, and I was just chatting, as I often do, with Wayne and Jake as we're waiting in line. I don't know what we were just talking about, something stupid, but of course it had to do with horse racing. I order, and then shortly after ordering, I hear somebody, a few people behind me in line, say, "Hey, are you Mike Hogan?" And I was like, yeah. And, you know, I was kind of taken aback. And he said, oh, yeah, I listen to the podcast all the time. I recognized your voice. And so I introduced
Fantastic.
Myself. Obviously, he knew who I was. And he, you know, said, yeah, I'm Mark. And so I said, yeah, you know, reach out, send me a note. You know, I mean, it was just surprised because I certainly wasn't expecting it. You know, I didn't really know what to say. So, you know, he reaches out. We email a little bit. Turned out he'd bought a formulator card plan that had expired, had some cards left on it. So I had Lonnie extend it, reached out and said, hey, you're all set up. If you have any questions with formulator, let me know. Well, it turns out, you know, he bought this plan. He got a little bit busy and then hadn't played in contests, as many contests as he thought he would. So he decided, okay, he's got formulator. I'll play in NHC qualify this week. And boom. He gets a seat to the NHC. He said he'd only played in 6 or 7 contests all year. He hadn't played in one in 4 months. And then, you know, he meets me at the food truck and gets his seat to NHC. So
he got the rub from the great Mike Hogan, and he put his formulator plan to good use, which is fantastic. I look forward to meeting him. He'd been a thoughtful commenter on the blog. When you mentioned the name to me before he qualified, after you met him, I knew the name, and I looked him up, and sure enough, he'd made some good comments on the blog in the past, and seems like a worthy player. And he definitely owes a big thank you to The Undertaker, because had he not already been double qualified, he wouldn't have gotten in. And as we all know, that should be the etiquette. As a Mapper Neer, I don't know if he ever got the fruit basket from either of the two players that his wins last year on the NHC Tour enabled other people to get to the big dance in Vegas. But in this case, it's a very clear line between Mark's success and the Undertaker, Stephen Thompson. So we'll have to introduce them at the NHC.
Well, Matt is here, so welcome, Matt.
What's up, gentlemen? How are you? Pete, how's it going?
What's going on? Life is good. Life is good.
Yeah. And so I don't know, you heard that story. Are you familiar with Mark Danbaum?
No, not at all.
He had met you and Pete both briefly at a contest, but it was, you know, I'm sure
it sounds about right. Yeah, no, and I don't mean that to sound negative. I just don't remember offhand.
Young guy, he's probably early 30s, seemed like a really nice guy. So
it's entirely possible.
We'd know him if we saw him.
But no, I did not. And then I didn't know the latter half of that. I heard about your star performance at the food truck. Yeah. I didn't know that this individual turned the meeting into absolute pay dirt. You want to talk about going for gold?
Reverse podcast jinx.
How about that? Yeah. I like that. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Pete, I see you've made it back over to the other side of the pond. Everything went well?
I've been here for a week. It's tough adjustment, man. The weather here is living up to its reputation, let me put it that way. But the flat season's done here now. Looking forward to the jumps. Have my press credential to go to Cheltenham next weekend. That's going to be fun. I'm still representing here, as you'll see from my shirt, but very, very sad about the Mets deciding to, you know, you can win, you can lose, but it's rough to hand 3 games that you have in the bag over to the other team. That's not fun.
Well, if you want to use a horse racing analogy, it's almost like this was their first against winners, you know? I mean,
wow. That's
right?
That's a little low.
No, I mean, what was the record last year?
No, I get that. They were basically a year ahead of schedule.
Right. That's what I'm saying. First against winners. So next year is like the, you know, second against winners. It's where the Royals were this year, if you want to look at it that way.
Let's just hope the Mets can solve some of their, let's face it, abundant lineup issues and have a chance to get back, because obviously those pitchers, they could be the backbone of a team that could be expected to play in the World Series. That's about as far as I'll go is with their chances next year. But what a great run. Wasn't expecting it. Had a ton of fun. And next time I got to make sure to get to these games. It was a little, it was wonderful watching them on TV in the middle of the night over here, but especially the home games, it was a little bittersweet just knowing that I should have been there, but hey, it all worked out the way it worked out, and at least I got to watch the games in proper time during the Breeders' Cup week.
I like it. So, what are we discussing here?
Well, I
you guys kicked this thing off. I you know, obviously,
okay.
uh, New York public transit is unreliable normally, but when you add some rain to it, good
forget
luck.
It.
Yeah.
So I will just follow your lead on this one.
Well, Pete's suggestion, and I think let's do it, and then we'll pivot from here to take up a little bit more of the eclipse discussion. Pete wanted to give his take. He listened to the end of the podcast last week when we were talking about the impact of American Pharoah and the superstars in the sport and how that is, you know, my take was it's potentially a barrier for new fans. But it obviously horse players understand that. Existing fans know that they're only going to get certain horses for X amount of time. And Pete, you listened to the podcast. We had a little bit of a discussion on Twitter. What's your take on what we were talking about last week?
Well, I thought it was a great discussion, and I do think I was happy that you admitted you were being greedy when you talked about how you hope that American Pharoah, you know, having now potentially created all these fans, could stick around. And I from a theoretical point of view, I certainly get where you're going with that. And the other part of it is that if you're just looking at it from a straight handicapping point of view, and you're looking at American Pharoah's PP, this does look like a horse who would be poised to have a tremendous campaign. I just feel like that race he run, tactical advantage or no, just looking at how he accomplished what he did in the Classic, this is a horse that would be incredible to see what he could continue to do. And potentially, I think, you know, just strictly from a figure point of view, it looks like a horse that could have been poised to go on to greater things. But in my heart of hearts, I never would have thought for a million years that would have happened. And I'm frankly still shocked we got to see these other three races from him. So I guess I fall a little more on the line of that conversation where Matt was than you were, Mike. But I think that the bigger question, and this is something I've been chatting about on Twitter, actually, Christian Helmers, Matt's old castmate from Horse Players, sent out a very interesting tweet that I responded to, where he said in his tweet, I should read it, but I don't have it in front of me, but the idea was that he felt like because the handle was flat in the Breeders' Cup, it what he actually said is undeniable, which is that means that, you know, where the racing industry still has so much to do, American Pharoah or no American Pharoah. And he's absolutely right about that. No horse is going to solve all the problems of the industry. But what I disagreed with, I guess, that was sort of implicit in that statement was the idea that you can judge anything about the effect that American Pharoah or any superstar horse is going to have on the sport by looking at one race 3 months, you know, later or whatever, in the same season that all this is going on. And then my buddy Ed DeRosa made a comment, also kind of cynically, about Zenyatta, saying that he didn't think that for all of Zenyatta's superstardom and being on 60 Minutes of this and that, his exact quote was something like, that didn't move the needle. And I also objected to that idea, saying, you don't, the equations that go into what makes the health of the racing industry are very complex. And I just don't think it's right to say, okay, horse A ran, and then thereafter, handle wasn't higher, therefore, horse A didn't have an effect. I mean, for all we know, without a horse, and I'm not saying this is right, but I'm just saying for all we know, the handle nationwide would be lower at this point without what Zenyatta did. I just thought it was interesting to try to connect the dots between these superstar horses and the overall health of the industry from a handle perspective and just see what you guys, sort of where you guys stand. I thought it was interesting. A lot of people said to me like, oh, Pete, I usually agree with you, but I actually think, you know, Christian's on the money with this one. And I'm not so sure you're right about American Pharoah going to have a beneficial effect long term. I was curious what you guys thought about this.
Matt, I'll let you start because I think I gave some of my thoughts last week.
First things first, Pete, was that in discussion, the handle, was it the Breeders' Cup as a whole or just the Classic?
I think he was talking about the Breeders' Cup as a whole.
Okay, so for me, that holds zero water because we're talking East Coast, West Coast, and you would have had an extra 3 hours to work with, basically, with the East Coast people. It would have been in prime time, you would have more eyeballs, and I don't know if that would have changed anything as far as the overall handle, but for me, that holds no water. The other thing is, I stand by what I said the other day. Like, I think we try to make this out to be so much more than it actually is. I mean, it's never going to be what it was in the 40s or 50s. It's not. I mean, this is what it is now. And Pete, like you say, maybe without a Zenyatta or without an American Pharoah, maybe the handle dips even more. But I surely am not looking at it like, I think it would be naive to think that all of a sudden a horse like this, even say he ran for another 7 years. I mean, I think it would just be naive for us to think that all of a sudden he is going to make this sport, you know, upper echelon again. It's just not going to be. With this day and age, I think we should just be happy with where it is. Let's try to just, hey, if we can keep a level, I think that's a success.
Well, you know, I think, and I mentioned it a little bit on last week's podcast, some of it is incremental. And a lot of the effect, I think, really takes years to truly see. Because let's face it, you, me, and I'm the oldest of the three of us here, but I'm still, as a horse player,
on
the
younger end. Basically a dead heat with me.
What's that?
I think you're basically in a dead heat with me. What are you, 43? Well,
44.
Okay, you are the oldest.
But
a couple old men.
But the point is, in the general horse player demographic, I still skew younger. Pete, you skew younger.
Right.
Matt, he's
like an embryo.
You're a complete outlier. I feel like there are a lot of listeners to the podcast. Obviously, we're doing, you know, podcasts probably skew a little bit younger.
Yeah.
A lot of our audience, certainly on Twitter, might skew a little bit younger. But generally, when you look at who it is that's buying the racing form, who it is that's buying even online, who it is that's wagering, they skew into the 60s and up. And so creating new fans, like today, tomorrow, when we talk about handle, that's a very immediate thing. Somebody watches Kentucky Derby and they get excited about it. Even, you know, 5 months later, 6 months later, how much are they going to be like, I want to bet on the Breeders' Cup? But this sort of thing takes years to really convert someone from a fan into a regular bettor. That it, to the extent that they are going to actually change the numbers in the handle. So I think that's one of the things that is hard to really quantify. And like you said, Pete, and I think you were getting at, you know, you've got younger players. Jonathan Kinchin, I know, was a big fan of Mike Smith and Zenyatta. And had she not come around, had that not been, I don't know. I mean, we can ask Kinchin whether or not he'd be a player, but maybe not, you know. And so it's that next wave of horse player that we have to start cultivating. And that next wave, they could be 10 right now. They could be 15. They could be, you know, I told the story about Maria Burrell as the six-year-old,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
With the we're not going to see those for years, but we need that, or else this game is going to go away and dry out as a lot of the players just age out.
But
so
I guess
it's more of a niche, right? I mean,
yeah. It's
like, you know, that lens, I agree. How could it not, my attitude is, how could it not help the health of the overall sport? And I love you pointing out the big picture. I'm sorry, Matt, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No. I guess I just look at it and say, how is this any different, really, than any of the other years? I mean, this is a group, obviously, the younger group coming through. I think it's one leads to the other. The younger people, like you say, it's going to take time for them to really have an effect as far as the handle. I think that's because as you get older, that's when you do develop that sort of expendable income. Most people, you know, in my age group, they don't want to be betting on things because they're probably worried about making rent. You know,
of course, you've got
priorities that you got to worry about. But the other thing, too, for me, though, I just don't see how it's any different now than it was, you know, it's 15, 20 years ago. I mean, when Cigar came rolling through, did Cigar really have a spike in handle now? I mean, I guess now would be the time that you could really look back and say, well, okay, that was 20 years ago. Did it really change anything? If anything, if we're being honest about it, the handle numbers, I correct me if I'm wrong, are down. I just don't think, I think this is what it is. I mean, I don't think we should try and reinvent the wheel. It is what it is, and let's just be thankful that it's still around.
Cigar is an interesting comparison for me because that was, I came to the game late, and Cigar was happening when I was becoming a fan. Now, I don't think that, I can't say that I became a fan because of Cigar, but Cigar made it a lot more exciting to be a racing fan in a way that might have pushed along my development. I just think it's very hard to ever look, it's again, it's such a complicated equation. It's so hard to know what effect any one horse would have. Somebody, you know, a Nate Silver type, somebody who's a whiz with spreadsheets and regression analysis, like, I'd love to see what an economist would say looking at star horses over the years and the marketplace. My gut is I'm not sure if it's the kind of effect that's going to leave huge footprints that you can look at and say, yes, that definitely happens. This is one where I just sort of pull back and just take my logic hat, and whether it's looking at my own experience or somebody like a Jonathan Kinchin, who obviously, you know, liked Zenyatta and Rachel Alexander so much, he has them tattooed on his body, and say, how can it not help? We've got to, mm-hmm. by reaching out to the larger culture and potentially creating fans, it's, you know, that's one end of the funnel, right? You know, we talk about this, I hear this term in business meetings at DRF sometimes, talking about the funnel and how people enter the funnel and then you sort of get them, you know, getting them down into the narrow end of the funnel. How can having the funnel be bigger be a bad thing for the game?
I don't think it's not a bad thing, and I don't want that to be like misconstrued what my feeling is. I mean, look, if this horse ran for the next 6-7 years, I think it couldn't hurt. But I also don't think he is going to be the savior that all of a sudden things, you know, or horses along of that nature are going to be the ones that make this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No. I mean, and I think I'm taking probably the most optimistic view of it, but I'm not at all saying that this is a panacea or a savior for the sport. There are a lot of other things that need to happen in order for the sport to be more mainstream than it currently is. And I think, in a way, you're right that it is ultimately and probably will continue to be a niche sport for the rest of my lifetime, at least. And I don't see anything that changing that. However, I do think that having superstars, regardless of whatever sport you're talking about, whatever event you're talking about, music, you know, sports, really anything, movies, that increases an interest. And we have this opportunity now, even more than we had with Cigar, certainly more than what we had, in my opinion, with Zenyatta or Rachel Alexandra, where the like it or not, the sport is so centered around the first Saturday in May in particular, or the Triple Crown in general, that we have a Triple Crown winner who then continued on and won a number of races, including the Breeders' Cup Classic afterwards. It's the first opportunity we've had in nearly 40 years, the first opportunity we've had since we've had the Breeders' Cup to really have a Triple Crown winner where the focus of racing is all kind of coalescing into the biggest moments of the sport. And Rachel, the Zenyatta story was nice because it was a filly taking on the mares, but she was not really ever going to be on the true national spotlight because she missed and was not available to run in the Triple Crown series, which is really such a focus for horse racing.
But I guess I look at that too, though, and say, I mean, I talked to Eric Wing about it briefly because he was watching in the lobby, and he said, I mean, I still think the general public would be much more interested next year in a horse going for another Triple Crown than seeing this horse run in the Dubai World Cup or something along those lines.
I disagree, and that's because I think the general public doesn't even realize that American Pharoah wouldn't be eligible to run in the Triple Crown next year.
Well, but I guess that's even more of a point, though, that it's just so ingrained in the public's mind, and I don't think they're going to break what they're doing in a March, you know, March 31st or March 30th to watch a race, whether it's in Dubai or watch the Big Cap or watch any of these races, because I just don't think they care that much. I think they like the idea of a horse going for the Triple Crown. And again, it's the other thing too that we have to keep in mind. We all love this game. Call it for what it is. I mean, it's slow. It's slow. And today, people don't want slow. People want now. And I don't.
Wait. Okay. I'm gonna completely take offense to that, because as someone who I think on the podcast has mentioned, I could not be more bored with football.
You are the vast minority.
I know, but that is, you compare that to horse racing, where you got most of the races are over in a minute to 2 minutes.
That's
tops.
That's not my greater point is of the day. we have half hour gaps between races. We have, and I mean, I just, you have to keep in mind, you are the vast, you are the 1%.
I know.
And that's not a bad thing. It is what it is.
It's fine.
But it's just,
but football's glacial. They play, they do one play.
No, it's
it
not,
lasts
though.
5 seconds.
Not,
and then there's a minute and a half before the next play.
That's not.
It's glacial.
It's not, man. You are.
This is
one where
they call timeouts. The last 2 minutes of the clock takes a half an hour.
There is so much more interest in. Let's call, but also be objective. There is so much more interest in football than there ever will be with horse racing.
Oh, I know, I'm in the minority, but if you're talking about speed of the game,
the speed of the game. The difference is, yeah. Guess what? The speed of a 6 furlong race. Yeah, it's going to be over in 1:10. But the grander thing is, for the entire day, how are you going to maintain people's interest when you've only run those 8 times or 9 times? I mean, that's the thing. The football game is, no matter what you say, how slow you may think it is, it's something's always going on. Whether there's a timeout, they're talking about strategy, they're doing whatever. There's commercials. Guess what? People are interested in the commercials. How do you fill 30 minutes between races? And I'm not saying that that's wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with our sport staying where it is. I really don't. I don't think we have to all of a sudden try to beat the NFL. I'm a niche sport where we've got a diehard group, whether it's Twitter, whether it's all, worldwide. I think where we are right now is an awesome spot. I just don't think we should try and turn it into, even with a horse like American Pharoah, let's not try and turn it into one of the big four.
Oh, well, I don't even think we're close. If we wanted to, I don't think we could.
Yeah. I also think there's something cultural. Like, even if American Pharoah stuck around to run next year, just in this theoretical conversation, it would have to be, I don't know how much, I honestly don't know how much more good it would do. I mean, I don't think it would be bad, but I'm a little more on the idea that he's kind of done what he could do in terms of mainstreaming the sport. And though it would be sure fun at next year's Breeders' Cup, but you see it here, it actually plays out. We actually have some data to look at in the difference between flat racing in the UK and the jump racing in the UK. In jump racing, horses will come back. I know a 4-year-old's a baby, a 7-year-old's still kind of young. Horses will run, 4 or 5 years in a row at the Cheltenham Festival, and they develop followings, real followings, and that's part of the sport. And I prefer the jump racing experiences I've had here. I think the fans they're a little more like real fans. A lot of the flat fans here, I mean, I don't mean to tar it, there are great flat fans here too, but if you go to the crowd I saw at Newmarket was a lot of people getting drunk, gambling, having fun. Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's great. I do that sometimes myself. But there's something really special when the culture is to have the same horses running year in, year out, the attachment they develop, going down and cheering every horse at Cheltenham who comes back to the winner's enclosure, whether you had a bet on them or not. It's something like deeply ingrained in the culture that I don't think we can even, we're so far away from it, we shouldn't even worry about it. That's sort of my point I'm trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the point, the more general point I'm trying to make is, as a sport, horse racing, because of the way it's created with the finances so heavily invested in the sales and the breeding aspect of it, by creation of all of this ancillary industries, we have, in our own making, limited the potential appeal of the sport. We are limiting the amount that the best horses are going to race because their value lies so much beyond the racing on the track. And as such, but like the fans are never, I mean, very, very few of them are going to get excited about a horse as a stallion because they get to wait 4 years to see the first foal.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. It would be an interesting thought experiment if you could just a thought experiment, nothing that's ever going to actually happen. But if somehow the purses were like increased by a factor of 10 in stakes races and suddenly there were a lot more horses who could actually make money, by continuing to race rather than go to stud. But I mean, again, it's never going to happen, so it's not worth spending too much time on. But it is, it's the economics of the game. It's a classic. It is what it is.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's kind of, I think that's just where I'm landing with this whole thing. And the difference too, with all the other sports, there is a gambling aspect, whether it's fantasy, whether you know, actually going through Las Vegas or other ways of getting a wager down.
Hey, daily our fantasy sports is just gambling with better PR.
Exactly. No, 100% agree. But the thing with our sport is it is solely based on gambling. Without the gambling, there is no sport. So that's the biggest thing for me, too, that the reason that I don't ever think that, and I don't want to make it sound like I'm just, you know, bashing what we do. I think we're in a great spot. I think this was the perfect sort of send off, the perfect storm of a year where this horse came along. And he did. Like you guys said, the funnel is, you know, the mouth of it is much greater now. We have more people that were.
Sure.
But I don't know that, boy, you know, there are just. With a football game or a basketball game or a hockey game, even from the wagering side of things, and you can make the argument both ways. The idea that, you know, for a basketball game, I need to, more or less, I need to pick one or the other. And maybe it depends on if I'm laying 3 points. Whereas in a horse race, I have 10 options. And I've got to go through and I've got to figure out which one's going to win, or without diving into, you know, at the very basic level.
Right.
I think that scares a lot of people, and it turns a lot of people off. A lot of my friends, they bet heavily into sports. They don't have any interest in horse racing. And then I try and sell them on the idea that, yeah, but you can get, you know, 10-1 on a proposition that probably should be 4-1. Like, that's a really good opportunity. But they still look at it and say, I have to worry about a little man or woman on the back. I have to worry about, does the horse feel good today? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Does he get out of the gate? Does, you know, just so many different things. They go with a basketball game. I mean, look, maybe LeBron doesn't feel good tonight, but he's probably still going to go for 26 and get his 8 or 10 rebounds, and the Cavs will still have a chance. And even if he doesn't, it'll be Kevin Love, or it'll be, you know, Tristan Thompson. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I just think the simplicity of, Pete, you know, being over
there. There's a barrier to entry with horse racing that's more complicated. And let's face it, too, you're paying, you know, in those various scenarios you mentioned where people are getting bets down, they're paying maybe 10%. And you struggle outside of the contest world to find that situation in horse racing, which is another not insignificant barrier to getting your peers a little more into our game, too.
And that's the thing. I really think we're in a very good spot. I just think the ceiling needs to be tempered a little bit, and I don't think the floor is nearly as bad as some people make it out to be. Like, I think, right. As always, most things, the truth lies somewhere in between. I think things are not nearly as bad as people want to make them out to be, and I don't think they're ever going to be what some people hope they can be.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And believe
that sounds
me,
like a good last word on that subject to me. I mean, that sounds pretty sharp.
Yeah, exactly. My point was not about.
I understand that.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if it was a world where we hadn't seen his last race? And I'll just leave it at that. Let's pivot just a quick discussion. I know, Pete, we're going to lose you in a few minutes, so feel free.
I could probably do 10 minutes, but then I gotta go to the nursery to pick up the little one.
Quick discussion based on what we've seen this year. Let's start thinking about year end awards. American Pharoah, I think, is your slam dunk as the horse of year, 3-year-old male.
If you don't vote for that, you should have your ballot taken away.
Right, exactly. 100% agree. We talked a little bit about who also gets votes, because obviously there are going to be three choices. Pete, what were your thoughts? Who are the other two that are deserving to be on the final ballot?
For 3-year-old we're talking?
For 3-year-old male.
I mean, Frosted and Keen Ice pop right to mind. Did you guys have any other ideas?
Well, I mentioned Run Happy. I don't think I've seen one more brilliant than Run Happy Save American Pharoah.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Do you think he'll get the support, or is everybody going to be thinking longer like you were, the classics? And
No, that makes sense as I think about it. I'll be honest. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the nomination side of things. As an academic discussion, I have no problem with it. But what little thinking I've done about the Eclipse Awards to this point is focused more on who's going to win awards. But I think Run Happy, you know, that is. It's funny. I was almost going to say he belongs in the conversation, but this is one where I almost think there should be no conversation. There should be one finalist, and we should move on.
We should move on. One other name I'll throw out there I think could end up on the final ballot, depending on what he does in a couple weeks. Dortmund. Could you see him getting some support over, say, Keen Ice or Frosted?
It's hard. I don't.
Santa Anita Derby, you know, third in the Kentucky Derby. One
is
returning.
It's not crazy. It's not crazy, but it just doesn't feel. I mean, it doesn't feel right the way that.
Could be Olders if he wins the Clark.
I think he's of the three that you had mentioned. I think he's on the outside looking in, okay. Even if he wins the Clark. Now, the only difference would be if, because it's not crazy to think that if he wins the Clark, they're talking Clark Malibu. If he wins both of them, then maybe he immediately eliminates Runhappy, because Runhappy is supposed to go to the Malibu as
sure.
Well. I still think no matter what, it's going to be Frosted and Keen Ice. Frosted probably for his overall body of work, and Keen Ice because he actually beat American Pharoah. And like Pete said, it probably shouldn't even have finalists. There's one.
Yeah,
just
one.
Give me the award right now.
One and move on. I agree. So Songbird as the 2-year-old filly, I don't even, you know, I can't even muster
no conversation
up
there.
Any other support for anybody else. How about Nyquist? Same boat with 2-year-old male?
No question.
Yeah.
Have you guys watched the replays of a horse named Smoky Image?
Yes.
I have not seen them.
What's your take on
him? He's a cowbred. He's very good. I don't know. I think he may just be one of those. I think he's a sprinter. I don't know if he'll be, you know, anything going past this. But I think he's a decent cowbred sprinter. I don't think he's going to be a monster.
They're going to try the California Chrome route with him.
They should.
See if he can stretch out.
Yeah, they should.
But, yeah, he's been... of the 2-year-old males I've seen, granted he's a sprinter, granted he's doing it against cowbreds, he's the most brilliant one I've seen. And boy, that last race especially, where he had everything against him and he still rallied. And you should check out some of his replays.
I will. I'll put that on my list of things to do later.
He's good.
Tonight, actually.
He's a good horse. I think Nyquist is a slam dunk in that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I don't think he's going to beat Nyquist.
I think he's a nice horse, and I think they have every right, every reason to try to stretch him and see if he can do it. But, you know, if you'd asked me if I thought California Chrome could do it, I would have said, hey, it'd be nice cowbred. So I mean, who knows? Maybe this one will be. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Let's move. 3-year-old filly is a wide open scramble. I don't even know. They've all kind of beaten up on each other. Does Stellar Wind now put herself near the top of the conversation with that second place finish in the distaff? But, Pete,
it's not crazy. That I think that's this whole discussion for the. I don't think we can even do in the time we have left. I was wondering if Carolina put himself back in the conversation with the third in that race, but you're right. Stellar Wind ran a lot better than she did. So she's got to be in the conversation. Is there any talk? I mean, is it completely ludicrous to look at Found for that role?
Well, that's the question. We talked about it a little bit. I mean, it's one of those where if you're making a case for her, it's just she's the best 3-year-old filly we've seen run in the States this year.
I mean, she is.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I just have a hard time voting for a horse off of a single race in the States.
There is precedent for it, but it
there
is. But I hear
is.
You. I mean, I'm not saying she's my pick or anything, but it just was the interesting turn, you know, that popped into head.
It becomes kind of a process of elimination vote, I think, when there's no other that stands out. It's sort of like the analogy of voting a pitcher for the MVP in baseball. It only happens in years where there's not another clear option. But, you know, I think she's in the conversation, too, of course. And we haven't even mentioned the Kentucky Oaks winner or I'm a Chatterbox, who I think might get a little bit.
Lovely Maria has no chance.
Well, no.
If I'm being kind.
I think you're probably right, based on what she did since.
For me, it's one of two. It's either Found or it's Lady Eli. The rest of them, throw them out. They all, War of Attrition, they just beat each other into the ground. And I don't think it's because they were all so superior. I just think they were all mediocre and they just beat each other up.
Speaking of mediocre and beat each other up, how about older dirt female?
No, I mean, that's a slam dunk.
Maria?
No, Boulder.
Oh, of course.
I mean, that's another unanimous. If she doesn't
win,
you should have your vote.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Revoked.
You're right. Absolutely. Absolute slam dunk. All right, how about Runhappy versus Private Zone in the sprint?
Oh, Runhappy won that one on the track, didn't he?
Yep.
How about female sprinter? They don't have a female turf sprint. Do you think Lady Shipman gets it, or is it...
Ooh. I didn't think about that. I think of that as a dirt award, but has a turf horse ever won it before?
I don't know.
I'd be surprised. I mean, I think she belongs, but I'd be surprised if she won.
Who's the winner?
I think it'll be Wayville Avenue. Just
Wayville
based
would
on
be the sort of my default knee jerk. But I mean, Lady Ship had a great campaign and ran a lot better than any of us thought she was going to in the Breeders'
right.
Cup.
And how about Lava Dodd? I think Lava Dodd's got to be up in the conversation because at least the number of wins, and that was a really, really good run at a distance that maybe she didn't want to go in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, how many wins did Wayville Avenue have in graded stakes this year?
But then I'm going to use you with the argument that you and Pete used last year, that the Breeders' Cup should be weighted so much more, and she beat her on the square.
She did. She did. She certainly did. But, you know, again, I ask how many wins. Did she have one other?
I think two. She might have two
she
wins.
She had one other graded stakes. Yeah.
No, it wasn't even a graded stakes.
Right. There was that optional claimer where she beat Sweet Whiskey.
But for Lava Dodd, as admirable as that performance was, I mean, she won a lot of listed stakes. I mean, she did win a couple of grades, but I mean, I don't think...
It's hard
I think,
to give it to her over Wayville, isn't it?
Yeah, for me it is anyway. I mean, I think it's Wayville Avenue. If not, but Lady Shipman is an interesting alternative.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that's the interesting one there. We'll have to table that one until that's a good one to debate as the winter goes on.
We'll let you go with the last word on the older dirt mail. Honor Code or Liam's Map, where are you leaning there?
It's got to be Honor Code to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I understand the case, but I don't like to see... I mean, part of the reason the Breeders' Cup was designed was to inform championship discussions. So, you know, go win the NIT, have your fun. The NCAA tournament determines the champion. So that's my that's my view on that one. Yeah. I think I stole that on Twitter. I'm not sure who from. I apologize. But there I am. Tepin. We should. What's Tepin going to win? Let's talk about her real quick before
it's female turf horse. I mean, same case for Found. Is she female turf horse over Tepin or Stephanie's Kitten?
Oh, isn't it Tepin? Of those three, isn't it Tepin on body of work?
I think so. I think so.
What do you think?
But in terms of field she beat, you know, Found may have been more brilliant.
I think, I mean, for that division, just Tepin from start to finish has just been a model of consistency throughout the year. So I'd be surprised if she didn't win. Stephanie's Kitten, I suppose, it goes back to the whole weight of a Breeders' Cup and the fact that she also had another graded stakes, grade one over here, compared to Found only having one. I just think Tepin, I could make the case Tepin should be, boy, if American Pharoah weren't around, I wouldn't be completely opposed to her being like an honorable mention for Horse of the Year. I mean, she was fantastic all year, and she beat the boys in the year end in the biggest race.
Important race than Stephanie's Kitten's race. I mean, the mile's no question a more important race than the filly and mare.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, she's not going to. She won't be a finalist for Horse of the Year. I don't think. But I wouldn't. If anyone came to me and said she deserves to be one of the final three, I wouldn't have any argument with that.
No,
I wouldn't argue
fair.
At all. Who will they be?
You figure Pharoah, probably
Beholder.
I don't know. Well, boy, if she had run in the Breeders' Cup, maybe. But the fact that she didn't even go, I would probably say Pharoah, Honor Code, maybe Liam's Map.
I'm not minding Tepin at all in that discussion. Mm-hmm. Well, just because it's like, at least with Tepin, what she did was so different that it doesn't seem like completely crazy to have her name next to... I mean, obviously, I'm not going to vote for her over American Pharoah, but it doesn't seem crazy to me to have her name there. That's going to be interesting to see.
From a Horse of the Year standpoint, I would put Tepin ahead of Beholder, and I was one of the few people, I think, that actually thought that if Beholder had run and beaten Pharoah very handily, that she would have had a legitimate case for Horse of the Year, and maybe that's a what have you done for me lately sort of thing. And it's probably also had to do with me thinking that I get the Triple Crown's an awesome accomplishment, but it shouldn't. I don't think it should just give you a guarantee that you're the one. But the fact that Beholder didn't run at all and Tepin did what she did, I think Tepin, if I had to pick one of the two females, I'd take her in a heartbeat.
Boys, I got to jump. Are you going to hang around for a little bit?
We'll maybe talk a little bit of older male turf.
Right, for another 5 minutes.
I will see you guys. I will see you guys very soon. I apologize for jumping early. Just family circumstances. Day. Pleasure speaking with you as always.
All right, Pete.
Thank you, Pete. We'll talk soon.
Cheers, boys.
All right, so.
This is a nice little graphic. I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
First time I've seen that. All right.
All right, so male turf.
Oh, boy, it's got to be Big Blue Kitten probably, right? Mm. Now, I shouldn't say
pizza
that. It could be him or the Pizza Man. I think they're the only two.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to say that the Pizza Man beat him on the square at Arlington, which is his home track.
Yep.
The Big Blue Kitten nearly sprung the upset over the 2 Euros. Mm-hmm. He's got a couple grade ones to his name. I think I'm probably going to lean toward Big Blue Kitten, but another one where I wouldn't. If you told me the Pizza Man, I wouldn't.
From a voter standpoint, do you think that there will be any negativity towards the Pizza Man having a rabbit helping him in many of the races?
Big Blue Kitten?
Yeah. Sorry, not Pizza Man, Big Blue Kitten.
No, no, I'd be just because I think that's a tactic that I don't understand why it's not employed more.
No, I'm not saying I have an issue with it. I'm just wondering if some of the voters might say, well, you know, beat him on the square, but yeah.
I mean, you know what? If they do, that's their... You know, it's your prerogative. I don't think it's I don't think it's a knock. I mean, I think it's a tactical move, and you know, and the Ramsey's got the perfect rabbit with Shining Copper. I mean, when they dipped in and took him, I think that was the perfect move.
Right.
But I suppose too, you know, did he absolutely need a rabbit? I don't think that's what kind of was the difference from him winning some of these races and losing.
Right.
And I've made it abundantly clear. I'm not a huge fan of Big Blue Kitten. I finally bought into the Pizza Man in time for him to run a clunker. So
you and everybody else. What did he open in the turf?
He was second choice, I believe.
I know, but I think he opened like really low, 5-2 or something. It's insane.
Yeah, I would lean toward Big Blue Kitten.
Interesting. My gut is leaning towards the Pizza Man, but
and again, a division where I wouldn't argue with anyone.
All right, let's move to the humans. My opinion, I think there's only one vote for trainer and jockey.
Well, it'll be Victor and Baffert, I think.
I was thinking more Javier for Jock. But it's all the one horse, the one horse will carry them through?
I think that all of the outfit right there
is just going to take
it. I think they're just going to take it. And I'm not saying that they don't deserve it, but whether right or wrong, someone like Victor.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Victor as a rider, clearly. But like you say, Javier is probably overall a sounder play. But I just have a feeling that this is going to be a... You know, just coronation sort of thing.
The Pharaoh, coattails.
Everything. So Baffert,
Zayat's for owner as well.
Yeah, the whole deal. Yeah. And again, I'm not saying that I think there's anything wrong with that. Yeah. I just, you know, I think that's what it'll be.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think it would be. I mean, obviously, he won last year. Javier's had, and not even arguably. I think on every sort of. Barometer a better year this year than he had last year when he won the Eclipse. I mean, if you just look at the graded stakes wins compared to everybody else, it's staggering.
Yeah, we've all talked about the difference between, you know, is it the rider or is it the, you know, the outfit that he gets, you know, is it from, you know, obviously riding first call for Pletcher goes a long way.
Right.
But he also gets the benefit of basically being 1B for Chad, you know, so when all of a sudden Chad gets one that Arad already has a mount, it's going to end up, so he's in a really good spot, but he deserves to be in that spot. If anyone watched the nightcap of Aqueduct on Monday, which won someone 313,000 in the pick six, He had that horse in the perfect spot.
Yep.
He waited, finally got a little bit of room on the inside.
Yep.
I didn't think he got the bob at first glance. Then when they slowed it down, I said, the horse, I mean, you got the bob. I don't know if you got there first. that you couldn't have gotten anything more out of that horse, and luckily dead heat he wins. So he seems to be, he's the kind of guy who at this point, I just like that you're more likely than not, you're not going to get a poor ride.
Right.
It won't be a poor decision that does the horse in. It'll be whether the horse is good enough or not, where you can't say that about everyone else, male or female.
And that's, I think, as horse players, that's really all you can ask for.
That is all I can ask for. Just give me a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't be parked 15 wide.
Right.
Don't, you know, let the horse just, unless the horse is a nutcase, but don't, you know, don't strangle a speed horse. Yeah. Don't do any of that kind of stuff. Just give me every opportunity that I have. Yeah. And if the horse is good enough, great. If not, I know you did your part, and that's, I tip my cap. That's all.
All right, well, it's been a fun discussion. Anything else that we didn't cover that we should?
No, we're kind of getting into that sort of lull.
The lull.
The little, you know, the Breeders' Cup hangover will last for a little while.
Yeah.
All in all, though, I assume we'll be back on Friday.
We'll be back on Friday. Then we'll have, you know, before we know it, we'll have Gulfstream opening up.
Gulf will be opening up. Santa Anita will open up around Christmas time.
Yep.
Other than that,
NHC
is the big thing. Next Saturday, I'm going back to Aqueduct.
Oh, yeah?
We'll see. It's a different format this year, but we'll have some fun with that. That's an NHC event, so people will be getting seats in there. But, yeah, obviously, I think everyone's focus, if you're a tournament player, is clearly the NHC.
It's the scramble.
If you haven't gotten in now, you got to get in. So, but, no, other than that, I think that's pretty much it. And we'll cook up some stuff to talk about on Friday, and we'll be good to go. And hopefully it won't be raining, and I will get here when I'm supposed to get here.
Well, it happens. It happens. I think on Friday, we're unlikely to have Pete, so we can be a little more flexible.
It could be you and I. Maybe we add in a third.
Maybe we haven't talked to Kinchin since the BC. We can maybe
pull
him in.
Haven't talked to JK. We can get, whether it's Lonnie or
He owes me one. He asked me a favor today. So.
All right. Well, hey, that's between you guys.
Yeah. So I'll maybe return the favor by having him sit in the pod.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for listening or watching. I'm not going to let Pete. I'll let Pete. Pete left early. He does the sign off. So I'll just say, this is the DRF Players Podcast. Mike Hogan, Matt Bernier, the no longer here Peter Thomas Fornatel. Thank you.